The Tydriven Chronicles by Richard Fife. Chapter 5. Thieves' Race. Marcus ducked into the hole's main room and looked back at Gavriel. You didn't really do that. Gavriel entered behind him and shrugged. What was I supposed to do? Tell them the truth? Marcus looked back to Kira, who had already flopped down on one of the couches. Kira, he's pulling my leg, right? He didn't actually... Did he? He was wearing a dress, Kira said. Why not just run with it? Marcus looked back at Gavriel, still unbelieving, and Gavriel laughed. What? Can't imagine me in a bonnet? Marcus sat down in a chair near the cold hearth. All right, fine. But where exactly were you hiding your gun? Well, Gavriel said. That was... He cut off as a bell lightly chimed above the fireplace. Kira looked over toward the door and reached inside her coat, and Gavriel, who was still standing near the entrance, stepped to one side so that Kira could have a clear shot and crossed his arms. Marcus looked around in confusion. What? Kira hushed him and kept her eyes on the stairs. A moment later, a round woman wearing a smock stepped down the stairs and stopped as three sets of eyes locked onto her. After a tense moment, Gavriel turned and swore, and Kira pulled an empty hand out of her coat. You just about got yourself shot, Nikki, Kira said. Nikki shrugged and walked into the room. I gave you time to relax before I came down. Brian walked in from the gang's hall. I heard the bell. What? Oh, Nikki, what brings you down here? Nikki smiled. Ah, good. Brian, you're in. I have some news for you. Brian gestured for Nikki to have a seat, then sat next to Kira. And what might that be? Nikki sat on a different couch, far away from the others. Your job went south last night, right? That's one way to put it, Gavriel said. Well, Nikki said, I think I know why. I was just over by the constable's station, and I saw your lockpick, Norrin, looking about as obvious as day that he'd just done something bad and making a beeline out of town. Brian grimaced at the news. How long ago? This morning, she said. I'd have come straight away, but I had business of my own. I had one of my people follow him, though, and sure enough he crossed the bridge and started east. I took the liberty of asking around, and it seems that he sold you guys out on last night's job to avoid getting the Nautilus. The Nautilus? Marcus said. Kira lifted up her sleeve and showed a Nautilus-shaped tattoo on her forearm. A number was inked under it. If you break the law too many times, or just break one real bad, they mark you. The Nautilus, to show that you're from the slums. If you're marked, only honest job you can get is in the factories, and they'll pay you half what they pay others and only give you the worst work. Did he tell them where the hole is? Brian said. I don't think so, Nikki said. I think he was too scared Gavriel would come and hunt him down if he'd done that. Still, puts you in a bind, a man down, and your lockpick at that. Going to make the race hard. We'll have to bow out, Brian said, as much as I hate to. We're actually two men down, Gavriel said. Jack died because of what Norrin did. If I ever see that purple-bellied louse, he's going to wish he'd just honestly stabbed me in the back instead of selling us out. He has a lot more to answer for than making us drop out of the race. What's this race? Marcus said. Nikki looked at Marcus for the first time. New recruit, Brian? Brian hesitated. After a fashion. Marcus, this is Nikki the Bird. She runs the Avery, a band of thieves that operates mostly in Uptown. Marcus nodded to Nikki. So, what's this race you're talking about? Every year, some crackpot noble we only know as Lord Shadow holds a race for thieves, Kira said. Only four bands get to run, and he picks them. This year was going to be the first time the hole got to compete, and now Norrin just ruined that for us. Because you need a lockpick, Marcus said. Kira smiled and shook her head. No, Marcus. Nikki raised an eyebrow. New boy's a lockpick, is he? That seems downright fortuitous. Marcus, thanks for the offer, Kira said, but I don't think you should run in the thieves' race. I don't need protection, Kira, Marcus said. This isn't about protecting you, Kira said. The thieves' race isn't a joke, and it definitely isn't something a rookie should be in. I'm not a rookie to this kind of work, Marcus said, nor to having people wanting you dead for doing it. If we drop out, who knows the next time Lord Shadow will let us run, Gavriel said. I think we should let him in. We'll still be a man down, Kira said. We'll just have to be a little more careful, Gavriel said. What do you say, boss? If we don't run, Shadow's likely to never let us run again. Brian rubbed his beard, then stood. I want to talk to you in private, Marcus. Come to my office. Kira gave Brian a dark look that he seemed to ignore. When Marcus tried to smile at her, she only turned her scowl to him. He followed Brian down to his office, which was a room only slightly larger than a normal bedroom, but that had somehow had a desk and a few chairs crammed into it. In one corner, a small mechanical contraption whizzed and purred. After a moment, Marcus realized it was a clockwork cat. Brian sat behind his desk and patted the table, and the cat uncurled itself and jumped to where Brian could rub the articulated plates that made up its body. "What is that?" Marcus said. Brian looked at the cat and smiled. "Oh, this is Ada. But I didn't bring you here to talk about my cat. I want to warn you about the thieves' race." "Kira is quite right. It's not something meant for beginners to our trade, and Lord Shadow ensures it isn't easy in several ways. Would it be more dangerous than sneaking into enemy encampments and stealing their battle plans and troop movements?" Brian nodded. "I see your point. I still want to make sure you understand what you're getting into. The operation on the Dunny Manor will seem like peanuts compared to this. We need to break into three houses, and while killing between the bands is highly frowned upon, it isn't out of the question." Marcus leaned forward. "Did I pass my test run last night? Am I part of the whole?" Brian wet his lips. "On a provisional basis, old chap. I won't be welcoming you with open arms after a day and one job and act of heroics. But yes, you are part of us." "Then I want to do this," Marcus said. "Head held high, right?" "Very well," Brian said. "Let's go tell the others, but I warn you, Kira won't be happy." "I don't need protection," Marcus said. "This isn't about her protecting you, my boy," Brian said. "She's borne the Nautilus for some time now, and the race is everything to her. She may have brought you here, but that you are running the race a couple of days after coming into town isn't going to ingratiate you to her. If you do well and we win, it will rub salt in a wound, and if we don't win, she will blame you." "That's hardly fair," Marcus said. "Life is such," Brian said. "Still sure you want to do this?" Marcus took a deep breath. "Yes." Winfeld looked over his reports and sighed. His station was horribly understaffed, so he knew he should not feel personally at fault that one of Saltine's men had managed to walk out without giving up anything more than the location of an anticipated job. It still rankled him. The warrant from Count Jaeger was filed away in his desk, appearing to be nothing more than the usual sting operation authorization. And Norn had walked before it had even been posted. Just a near miss, that was all. "Sir?" Winfeld looked up to see Andrew Dryden, one of the newer patrolmen, standing in the door with a thick dossier in his hands. Joss Snett, another junior patrolman, stood behind him. "Yes, patrolman?" "I have something you might want to see," Andrew said. "We were just hit with a large number of tips on jobs, all set to happen on the same day. 4 bands of thieves, 9 manors of lesser nobles in the Garden District, details the times..." "Sir, this is huge!" Winfeld furrowed his brow and looked over at a calendar. Was it that late in the year already? "Just put it on my desk. I'll see to it in a little bit." "Sir," Joss said, "this is huge! We could take out 4 of the most notorious gangs in the slums in one day. Shouldn't we be acting on this immediately?" Winfeld gave Joss a glare that forced the man back a step. "You're both new, so I'd imagine you don't know about Lord Shadow's race." "We do try and keep its existence rather quiet, as it's a blemish on the constabulary in general, but it isn't exactly groundbreaking. We'll dispatch men and warn the targets. Honestly, this is more of a prank. The thieves never steal anything." Andrew opened the dossier. "But, sir..." "They know we'll be there. To them, we're just an obstacle in their crazed race. All they're after are clues that this Lord Shadow person is hidden in the manors." Winfeld sighed and reached for his mug of coffee. "But since you have it open, which bands are competing this year?"
Nikki's Aviary, Carloni's Den, Virgil's Abode, and Saltine's Hole."
Winfeld nearly spat his coffee out. "Saltine? Are you certain?" Andrew only nodded, and Joss looked over his shoulder at the dossier. "Saltine? Who's that? I've heard of the other 3. "We just received a warrant from Sunset House for Saltine and his gang," Winfeld said. "I'm surprised they're running, though Lord Shadow does seem to like to have an underdog in the race." He stood and walked to a map of Tyjervin that was on his wall.
Read me the target manors. Andrew did, and Winfeld marked them with pins on the map. They formed an X that was about 3 miles across. He rubbed his chin and looked at the map. The tips don't say which band is targeting which house. It was not a question. He had been reading race dossiers for years. But they each will hit 3. 2 on one leg, and then they all are aiming for the middle. We'll want to focus on that house. But if it's a race, Joss said, what happens if Saltine's band doesn't win? I'm guessing that's who we're targeting. We'll make sure he wins, Winfeld said. We'll have men at all the houses and distribute descriptions of his band to all of them. If they see Saltine's men, they are to stand down and let them pass. We'll slow the other bands down, maybe even capture some of them on their legs, but Saltine's men will face the brunt of our force at the last manor. We're just going to let them steal from the first two houses? Andrew said. Like I said, patrolman, they won't steal anything but the clue to their next target. And so, we can let them think they are having an easy time of it. And then, once they are in the last house, we spring our trap. Winfeld smiled. And then we'll have him. Saltine, sir? Joss said. No, Winfeld said. Someone better. Marcus took a sip of his coffee and looked out over the street. It was a half hour until the race would begin, and he was having serious doubts about whether or not he was ready. Everyone in the hole had spent the rest of the day after Nicky had left drilling Marcus on the rules of the race, and he was honestly surprised at how few there were. The teams were not allowed to interfere with each other, but there would be bands of thieves that would, not to mention tipped-off constables. Murder of a constable or civilian would instantly disqualify a band, but not killing other thieves, although that was frowned upon. And, of course, no one could start the race until 8 in the morning, but they could be within 1 block of their first target. Other than that, it was no holds barred. Thus, here he sat with Kira and Gabriel. Margot and Gust were further down the street, scouting out to try and find where the constables or other thieves might be. Vlad was sitting a block away at another cafe. His job, as Marcus understood it, was to be a distraction. Gabriel patted him on the back and smiled. You'll be fine, Marcus. Just need to get us through locked doors, is all. Not like you have to crack a safe. I don't know how Shadow gets the clues in there, but he at least only leaves them behind paintings or the like. I'm not worried, Marcus said. Just anxious. I didn't know this took place in broad daylight when I agreed. It's too late now, Kira said. So just calm down already. Snapping at him isn't going to help him or us, Kira, Gabriel said. Why don't you calm down? Kira narrowed her eyes, but did not respond, instead turning her attention to her coffee. Marcus nodded to Gabriel in appreciation, and then tried to calm down as he finished his drink. The pastry he left mostly untouched, though. He had eaten a bowl of porridge at the hole and honestly thought that would do him better than the sugary thing in front of him. Anyway, they had only ordered to maintain the appearance that they were lazy nobles having their breakfast out. At the other cafe, Vlad stood up and walked a small ways further down the street. In the distance, a clock tower told the hour, and a small explosion filled Vlad's cafe with smoke. People screamed and ran, some towards the commotion and some away. Gabriel, Kira, and Marcus stood and joined the crowd running away, towards their first target. You'll be fine, Gabriel said over the din. Just stay with us and do your job, right? Marcus nodded. Right. Marcus felt the tumblers catch in the lock, and he pulled the tools out and opened the door to the art gallery. Kira slipped past without making as much as a whisper, and Marcus stood up and waited. Gotcha! Marcus turned to see a seedy-looking man running at him with a club. His first thought was to reach for his gun, but he stopped himself. The man was only a thief, but Marcus did not want to make the social misstep of killing. His hesitation made him slow to raise his arm in defense, but fortunately the blow never landed. Gabriel appeared from the intersecting hall and grabbed the tough by the wrist. He twisted, and there was a small audible pop as the thief's wrist broke. Before he could scream out in pain, Gabriel headbutted him, knocking him out cold. Something's wrong, Gabriel said. This is too easy. Too easy? Marcus said. That man was about to decorate the wall with my brains. Faw, Gabriel said. Old Chib here wouldn't have killed you, only knocked you out. You know him? Yeah, Gabriel said. I used to run with his band before I joined up with Brian's. Still seems too easy. Where's the constables? I haven't seen a single one of them since we started. It's not right. Kira came out of the gallery with a folded envelope in her hand. Stop your moaning, Gabriel. Maybe we're just too smooth for them. The best thieves in Tigervan run into trouble with the constables on the race, Kira, Gabriel said. Shadow tips the constables off, you know that. So why haven't they been at either of our houses? Kira bit her lip. I don't know, but there isn't much we can do. Shall we see where the last manor is? Gabriel nodded, and she opened the envelope and pulled out the instruction sheet. When she looked at the page, her face went pale. Marcus looked over her shoulder. What's wrong, Kira? What? Oh, nothing, she said. Our last target is the Tidor Manor. Second story, West Wing Library. It'll be tucked into a book on a lectern. Tidor Manor it is, then, Gabriel said. Let's get out of here and collect the others. And hope no one else has beaten us to it, Marcus said. Oh, we'll be fine, Gabriel said. They're probably still just beginning their second targets, how fast we've been moving. Unless the constables aren't at any of the houses, Marcus said. Maybe they'll be waiting for all of us at the last house. Maybe, Gabriel said. We'll just have to be careful. Now come on. Vlad's first explosion caused just as much of a ruckus as it had at the prior two houses, and Kira, Gabriel, and Marcus ran down the alley to Tidor Manor. As far as they could tell, they were indeed the first band here. When they reached the back entrance, Kira came up short. I don't like this, she said. Maybe you're right about this being a trap. It's the thieves' race, Gabriel said. Of course it's a trap. Well, yes, but... Are you really going belly up on me now, Kira? Gabriel said. Pull it together. One last quick job. Knock out some house guards, maybe finally a constable or two, pick a few locks, and we're done, all right? What if it's more than just a few constables, she said. Are you all right, Kira? Marcus said. You've been acting funny since we saw that Tidor Manor was the last house. She blinked and shook her head. I'm fine, thank you very much. I just want to make sure we aren't about to tie a noose around our necks. We'll be careful, Marcus said. All right? She crossed her arms and huffed. Kira, Gabriel said. You ready? Fine, sure. Let's do this. Gabriel smiled and nodded to Marcus, who had already taken his glove off and was at the lock in a moment. The lock came free fairly easily, and Kira slipped through the door while he put his tools away. Marcus turned to Gabriel while they waited. Something's bothering her. Praydon knows what, Gabriel said. She's been looking forward to running this race ever since we found out we were one of the teams a month ago. Now she's getting cold feet at the last moment? Doesn't make sense. Marcus started to say something else, but Kira reappeared in the doorway, a wet rag in her hand and a bottle of chloroform in the other. Gabriel gave Marcus a look that said, another time, and headed in, and Marcus had no choice but to follow. Past the door, they had to step over the unconscious body of a guard. Kira looked down at him in disgust for a moment, then signaled for them to follow her. The small back garden was otherwise empty, and they quickly made their way to a side entrance, which was, of course, locked. Marcus made short work of it, and they entered the manor's expansive pantry. All right, Gabriel said. Now to get to the library. If anyone is waiting for us, they'll probably be expecting us to try to get upstairs first, then make our way to the West Wing, so I say we do the exact opposite. From the looks of the place outside, there's a stairwell not too far from where the library is. Let's get there first. Kira nodded and cracked the pantry door to look into the kitchen. After a moment, she gestured for them to follow her. They went to the doors that led to the dining room, and Kira looked through the crack where the doors did not quite meet. She then waved them back and shook her head. Constables, she said, and a lot of them. How many is a lot? Gabriel said. Too many. We aren't going that way. She looked at Marcus. How much do you weigh? A little over 20 stone, he said. Why? She turned to Gabriel. And that's about how much you weigh too, right? Gabriel was looking at Marcus in shock. Yeah. She nodded and looked over to the other side of the kitchen. I should be able to handle that. I hope you both can ball up well. Marcus followed her gaze to a sliding door set into the wall above a counter. A dumbwaiter? Can it hold us? Gabriel said. I know kids use them from time to time, but they aren't exactly meant to haul full-grown men. What choice do we have? I'll go first, since I'm quite a bit lighter than you bags of bricks. She walked over and slid the door open, then pulled out two shelves that were inside it. Kind of large for a kitchen dumbwaiter, Marcus said. What do they need all that room for? It lets them get an entire feast to the upstairs banquet hall on a single trip. Kira crawled into the dumbwaiter. Lord Tider is not a patient man.
You know Tider? Gabriel said.
What?
She blinked and looked up at him.
Of course not. I've just heard it on the street, and I can believe it from this huge dumbwaiter. Now come on, haul me up.
I'll make sure the coast is clear and then send the dumbwaiter back down.
Gabriel grunted but closed the door and pulled on the rope that operated the lift. When it would move no further, he let go gently, and it only gave back a little bit as the upper locking mechanism engaged. The door behind them opened, and Marcus turned around to see a maid backing into the kitchen. A moment later, Gabriel pulled him down below the counter. The maid picked up something off the counter and went back out into the dining room without a word. Marcus peeked around a corner to make sure she was gone, then stood back up.
My heart's beating fast enough that I think it'll use up all my steam on its own, he said.
Well, calm down, Gabriel said. You need to not freeze like that. If she had been coming in face forward, we'd be neck-deep in constables right now.
Marcus took a deep breath and nodded. Behind them, the dumbwaiter started moving again. When it was back down, Gabriel opened the compartment and gestured to Marcus. Marcus sighed and crawled into the lift. He had to tuck his legs into his chest, and he could feel the strange edges of his metal knees through the thin fabric of his trousers.
I don't trust this thing, Gabriel said, so I'll take you up nice and easy, all right? When you send it back down, I'll tug on the line to let you know I'm ready.
Marcus nodded, and Gabriel closed the door, shutting Marcus in complete darkness. The dumbwaiter started moving a moment later, and he forced himself to take slow, deep breaths. Gabriel was not lying when he said he was going to take it slow, but the lift did not seem the least bit bothered by Marcus's considerable weight. The lift stopped, and he felt the latching mechanism engage. A moment later, Kira slid the door open and helped him out.
Everything okay? She said.
Peachy, he said.
Good. You handle the lift, she said. I don't think I could manage hauling Gabriel up, even with the pulleys.
I'll keep an eye on the hallway. Marcus nodded, and Kira went over to the other side of the banquet room. It only took Gabriel a few moments to get into the dumbwaiter once Marcus had lowered it back down, and he pulled the large man up at a slightly faster clip than he'd gone himself. The dumbwaiter door opened, and Gabriel growled as he crawled out.
What was the idea, bringing me up so fast?
You're here and safe, aren't you?
Faw, whatever, he said.
How are we looking, Kira?
Constable's in the hall, she said.
Damn, Marcus said. What now?
We'll sneak through the living quarters, she said. They're all interconnected along the hallway, even into here.
How do you know that? Gabriel said.
Because I'm not a strong thief, she said, so I have to be a smart one. And I noticed this door over here that isn't all that well concealed, and when I poked my head in, I saw one that led to the next room as well.
All right, Gabriel said. Stop showing off and lead the way.
Kira peeked through the door again, and then opened it wide and waved for them to follow.
Marcus went first, and Gabriel brought up the rear. The room was painted in a light pink and showed obvious signs of disuse, even though the staff kept it at least clean of dust. The door to the next room was open, and Marcus could see the closed door to the room after beyond that. Kira walked quickly through the pink room, making an almost pointed effort to not look at anything, and rushed into the next room without even looking.
What? A voice said. Who are... Wait!
Kira spun to look at the unseen voice, and Marcus rushed in. Before he could even get through the door, she had already darted to whoever had spoke. When he turned the corner, he was to see her holding a barely struggling lad with a damp rag over his mouth and nose. A moment later, she gently laid him down and brushed his hair back with a gentle caress.
So young, but so old. Her voice was barely above a whisper.
What's that, Kira? Gabriel said. You know this whelp? She stood and shook her head, then turned to the next door and checked it. It proved to lead to an empty bedroom, and beyond that, a door opened to an empty hallway. Kira checked the hallway and motioned for them to stay. If Marcus had his guess, a patrolman was occasionally poking his head into the hallway. After a tense moment, she motioned for them to move silently, and they hurried into the hallway and round the next bin, first Kira, then Marcus, and finally Gavriel. Just before Gavriel reached the next hall, a shout rose up from behind them.
"Hold it!"
Gavriel snarled.
"Kira, go ahead. Marcus and I will hold them off."
"The library will be locked," she said. "I'll hold them with you. Marcus, go ahead." Marcus hesitated. "How many are there?"
"Kira and I can handle it," Gavriel said. "She's right. Go!"
Marcus swallowed hard and ran to the end of the hallway to a set of double doors. Sure enough, the door was locked, but he did not even bother with picking it. No rules said they had to pick the locks. They only did to avoid detection. It was too late for that. So he raised his foot up and kicked the door as hard as he could with all the strength of his mechanical leg. The doors buckled and the lock snapped out as it swung open. Inside, two constables were standing flanking the only lectern in the room. The guns were already out and quickly trained on Marcus.
"Hold it right there," the first one, a taller, slender man, said.
"Is that him, Andrew?" the second said.
"He isn't any of them from the sketches, Joss," Andrew said.
"And we know Saltine's group is here. I'd say yes. That's the Revenant."
"We know you're a Revenant," Joss said. "Don't think you can trick us. Don't come any closer or we'll shoot."
Joss?" Andrew said. "Do bullets work on Revenants?"
Joss spared a look for Andrew.
He tightened his grip on his gun. Marcus raised his arm slowly.
"You got me. No need to get anxious. Just calm down."
The two constables looked at him, unsure. Behind them, through a window, a motion caught Marcus's eye. The constables must have noticed his distraction, because they looked too, just as a man in a black coat and clothes, wearing a mask, and with what appeared to be a sword at his side, came swinging down from the roof and through the window with a loud crash. The constables turned their guns towards the man, but before they could even say anything, the man twisted a knob on his belt, had his shock rod out, and brushed it against the barrels of both weapons. The men screamed and fell, and the room was filled with the roar of gunfire as the bullets in the revolvers went off. Blue light arced in the room as some of the bullets almost hit the man, and Marcus felt a sharp sting of half-distant pain in his right bicep. He grabbed at his arm for a moment and realized he had been shot, but the guns had been facing the other way. How did one hit him? He did not have time to wonder as the man in black walked slowly towards him, shock rod casually held at his side.
"You're the bastard that killed Jack, aren't you?"
The man tilted his head to the side and gestured towards Marcus's arm with his weapon. He then tapped the back of his head with his free hand, just below where his hairline would be.
"Am I a cyborg?" The man nodded.
"What do you care?" The man lifted up his left hand and looked at the unmarked bracer on it.
"Oh, hoping to figure out how I work," Marcus said. "Quentin himself made me. I doubt even Tesma could understand how I work."
The man suddenly swung with the shock rod, and Marcus stumbled back, barely avoiding the weapon. The man lunged again, and Marcus dodged to the side. He had to restrain himself from trying to punch the man's exposed flank. He still remembered quite clearly what had happened to Jack. He needed something wooden. Unfortunately, the tables in the library were thick, heavy things that he would not be able to rip a leg off of or throw at the man with any ease. The only other thing was the lectern. A book sat closed on it, and he threw the book without thinking at the man before picking the stand up by its narrow base. He turned around as the man knocked the book out of the air with his free hand, and then he remembered why he was even in the library in the first place. Fortunately, now that he had a weapon and could actually cause some damage, the man took a more defensive posture. He made an awkward lunge with the lectern, and the man turned aside and grabbed it. Marcus smiled and used all his strength to swing the podium around. The man let go, but not before he was thrown off balance and stumbled into a bookshelf across the room. Marcus took his chance, throwing the lectern at the man and darting out. He picked up the book he had thrown on his way. Back in the hallway, Gavriel and Kira were still fighting with the constables. Several were bloody and laying on the floor, but there were still a few standing and fighting with their nightsticks. Gavriel and Kira bore several gashes and bruises themselves, and were probably only standing because of how narrow the hallway was. Marcus rushed past them and punched the closest constable as hard as he could in the shoulder. Bone cracked and the man screamed, and Marcus turned and kicked another in the knee. The last constable went wide-eyed at Marcus, but Gavriel quickly grabbed him and slammed him hard into the wall, knocking him senseless.
"Got it?" Gavriel said.
"Yes," Marcus said.
But that man with the shock shield is behind me. Hurry! Gavriel glanced back. Where? Marcus stopped and turned around, and the man was nowhere to be seen. Outside, there was a commotion that was too loud to be just flawed. Come on, he said. Let's get out of here. We can jump out a window. I'll catch you as you fall. They fortunately did not run into any more guards or constables, and once they were at the fallback, Kira pointed at Marcus's arm. What happened? There were constables waiting for me in the library. Marcus pulled his coat off and ripped his sleeve to look at the damage. Not just for any thief. They knew about Brian, and they knew I'm a cyborg. She gasped. And they shot you? No, I'm not quite sure how I got shot. The man with the shock shield hit their guns with his shock rod, and it made all the bullets in them go off at once. One must have just backfired into me or something. He looked at the dented brass plate on his bicep and sighed. Only superficial. I can fix this easily. She bit her lip. What happens if you get hurt and can't fix it? He looked down at the dinged brass plate. I'll just have to not get hurt. That's well and good, Gabriel said. Did you at least get the last target? Kira made a disgusted sound, but as Marcus reached into his now discarded coat, he saw her eyes grow large. He pulled out the book and shook it until a folded envelope fell out. Inside would be instructions to the real prize, a sizable pile of cash and rings for each member of the team. He looked up at them and smiled. Guess this means we won. Winfeld looked in on the room where Joss and Andrew were recovering. They had yet to give a report, their minds were still phased, but the doctor knew a shock rod injury when he saw one. Other constables had verified that Saltine's band had been at Tighter Manor, though, and that a member not in the dossiers and with extreme strength was among them. Winfeld was not upset. The thieves' race always was an embarrassment for the constabulary. No, this was a success. They knew the Revenant was indeed with Saltine. Before, they had only been able to assume. He walked down the hall and noticed a constable from the garden district standing guard at a door. He nodded to the man and glanced inside, where a single man with dark skin was sitting in his bed, staring up at the ceiling. "What's this, then?" Winfeld said. "A burglar that was left behind at the Dunny Manor a couple nights back," the patrolman said. "Got hit by a shock rod pretty bad. The docs are surprised he survived. Can't understand a thing he says, for how much he stutters. I don't even think he's speaking Santashin." Winfeld nodded. "May I?" The patrolman shrugged, and Winfeld walked into the room. The man's eyes flicked to him, then back to the ceiling. There was not much going on behind those eyes, but the man looked familiar. Winfeld reached down and twisted the man's forearm around, and sure enough, there was the Nautilus, complete with a number Winfeld recognized. He smiled. "Well, hello there, Mr. Duraz." He spoke in Krellin, the man's native language. "I am Constable Black, and I think you and I are going to be having some nice, long talks."